I really feel sorry for my children. From day one, we stressed and re-stressed the need to be better than everyone else, because nobody would really believe that they were equals unless they were better than their contemporaries.
What really pierces and goes straight to the heart is that fear of death, or that fear of my child being hurt.
From Valley Public Radio, you're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. What you're hearing are the voices of parents talking about what it's like to raise Black children in America. We're going to start today's show with a sobering conversation about this experience. Joining me are retired educator and Brigadier General Isaac Sandiford Jr., Dr. Edith Stewart, a general surgeon who practices in Merced, Shantae Davies-Balch, CEO of the Black Wellness and Prosperity Center in Fresno, and Dipna Ugwuoju, editor of Fresno Land. Dipna also led the journalism program at Fresno City College and was a colleague of mine at the college before her retirement in May. Dr. Stewart, I'd like to start with you. What are the conversations you're having in your family, and specifically with your children, about the death of George Floyd?
Well, we've had quite a few conversations. Earlier in the year, we had the talk. I'm sure everybody knows what the talk is when you explain to your child what to do when they're, you know, have encountered law enforcement. And so what we've had most recently is an extension of those conversations, you know, an extension in terms of not just what do you do if you stop, but what do you do if maybe you videotape something or a friend has videotaped something. And we've had conversations about what this means for the people that are in your classrooms, the people that teach you, and just tried to have some organic conversations based around what we may see on the news or what my child may see on social media.
Dipna, you wrote a column for the Fresno Bee about your response, your feelings about this moment that we're in. Can you share a bit about the conversations that you've been having with your adult children?
Yes, the conversation, of course, has changed because they live separately, two in New York and one in Oregon. But the conversation continues because the anxiety isn't any less because your children are no longer under your roof. At their ages, you still think of them. I mean, you're their mother, so your first concern is their safety. But every single one of them is able to engage on many, many levels. You know, we talk about what just happened and what are the implications for them in terms of where they live, in terms of their jobs, what's going on, and what are their interactions with everyone else in their different professions. As a parent, I think it's even harder because you don't have them close to you so you can, you know, put your arms around them and tell them it's going to be okay. But I think also because they're a little older, every single one of them is able to understand fully, you know, in a way that they can, and process it in the way that it helps them most.
And Isaac, you have grown children as well. Are you having similar conversations, similar experiences?
Yes, indeed. Having similar conversations. In addition to conversations about the reactions since the death of Mr. Floyd, and how as their generation needs to continue to speak truth to power and continue to fight the fight of protesting for justice and fairness across the land.
Shantae, your children are, I guess, going into 7th grade and 9th grade. So, I mean, they're old enough to be following the news. They are obviously, I'm sure, have strong feelings about what's happening. Tell us about not only the conversations you're having in this moment, but as mentioned earlier, having the talk with your children about how, as a Black person, you should interact with the police.
So it's a really great question. And,
these types of conversations for us has been really ongoing since, you know, I felt that there was some level of understanding for us to begin having the conversation. The very unfortunate situation with Mr. Floyd is nothing that is new in the Black community. There's a very long 401-year history of racism and oppression in this country. The difference, though, is that now we have, you know, access to things like video where maybe before we didn't have so many visuals. So the real conversations that we're having in our household is not just about the realities of how folks perceive you, but also the need to be actively engaged and actually like take action. And we talk a lot about the differences between like passive action, which is something like, oh, that's really sad that that happened to Mr. Floyd. That's really too bad, versus taking action and taking a stand.
Edith, I would love for you to share how difficult it is for you emotionally to be raising a Black son in America and to have these kinds of conversations with him.
Yes, you know, it has been a burden on my heart for a while. Raising a Black son, it adds on to being a Black person. So you're already a Black person, and there's that weight, that burden. And then you have a Black son, and it's almost indescribable. My son doesn't drive yet, but he goes to school every day, and he interacts with people. And so we have had conversations about things that have happened to him in school. And so I think maybe the first time something that happened that I thought may have been race-based, that was race-based, it really broke my heart to have to tell this little boy who can't understand, Mommy, what is wrong? It had to do with the band. What is wrong? What is wrong with me? What is going on? There has to be something. My child was really struggling with, you know, why something didn't happen for him. And to have that very first conversation, it's like you never want to have that conversation. But you do, and that has been a struggle. But what really pierces and goes straight to the heart is that fear of death, or that fear of my child being hurt. And I remember my husband saying, when my son was 11, they were in the airport, and I said, "Where's Thomas?" And he said, "Oh, he's sitting, you know, he's down, you know, a few chairs." And I said, "Well, don't leave him there." And he said, "Nobody's going to mess with him because White America sees him as a man." And I said, "But he's my little boy." He said, "I know he's a little boy, but America sees him as a man." So there's this constant walking around with, you know, just sort of the nagging, you know, feeling in your mind that something may happen. And we don't have time to hear, but I have a story that happened. We took a young a white friend of my son skiing with us in Utah, and the boys they got lost, and they were knocking on different doors. And when they came to me and told me what happened, and my heart sunk, because I knew what could have happened to my son from knocking on doors of people you don't know. They didn't understand, but I knew. And so in that moment, I had to explain to both a Black young man and a white young man how things were different. So that's just some of the experiences and feelings that I've had raising my Black son in this time.
Shantae, can you speak to what experience your kids have had going to public schools?
Sure. They've had a horrific experience. So I will say right from the beginning, all of my kids have always been extremely high academic achievers. But really since, I would say, maybe towards fourth and fifth grade, we really started to notice a difference in how they were being treated in terms of you know, making assumptions about what types of resources we did or did not have, making assumptions about my child needing, you know, special support, or really just sort of putting us in a box and a category. But I want to say some of the starkest things that stand out for me really is two things that happened when my daughter was in high school and in junior high. So she attended Computech Middle School, and one day in class, a student decided to cut off her entire ponytail down to basically like her scalp. And the consequence for this white student was for the student to receive a one-day in-office suspension. Had my Black daughter cut off the entire ponytail of a white student, I guarantee that she would have been charged for, like, bodily assault. The second really stark incident for me that stands out is once my daughter got to Edison High School, she was really interested in serving in leadership after she'd already taken 5 or 6 years of French, and she just was ready to move on. She was told by the counselor that she could not transfer in the middle of a semester. So I emailed the counselor back and said, here's a list of 5 students that transferred in the middle of the semester. They were all white, by the way. One of the students happened to be the son of the principal. And then after being told, oh, there's no room, I called someone I knew at the district to ask them, can you please tell me how many students are enrolled in this classroom? What is the California ratio for how many students are allowed to be in that class? They gave me the numbers. There was plenty of room for her. So I emailed back, and then I was told, oh, we're sorry, we're not at capacity. However, since your daughter is not a senior, she's not able to be part of leadership because we reserve leadership for 11th and 12th graders, or you have to be part of the elected student body. So then I emailed them back and said, here are a list of the students that transferred in the middle of the semester who are not elected. Please help me understand why there is not space for my daughter. Within 2 minutes, she was suddenly enrolled.
Wow. You know, Dimna, you wrote about the need as a Black person to behave exceptionally. And it's yeah. a pressure that I felt profoundly as I move through the world with Black skin. Can you talk yeah. about that pressure and what it feels like to carry that at all times?
Yes, now in retrospect, I really feel sorry for my children. From day one, we stressed and re-stressed the need to be better than everyone else because nobody would really believe that they were equals unless they were better than their contemporaries. And so it meant for me that I devoted so much time in their infancy reading so that by the time they were ready for preschool, they would be reading rather than wait until when it's age appropriate. I made sure that there was absolutely no competition. But in spite of all that, and I'm sorry if it would take a minute, we encountered at every step of the way difficulty, especially with our oldest. When she was in kindergarten, the teacher through the first semester of kindergarten kept saying she was disconnected, she couldn't recognize their letters, she couldn't recognize their numbers. And I asked the teacher, point blank, is this the same child? And the teacher said, oh, she has to be studied, maybe she needs additional resources, she needs that. And because I was in education at the time and I understood the process, I wrote letters to the principal, to the school board, whoever, and I said, I want my child independently studied because I didn't want her to be tracked into a place where she didn't belong. And they studied this child. She was not even far. I mean, she was always younger than her group because her birthday is in November. They came back and told us she was reading at the fourth grade, second semester level. This was in kindergarten. But nobody gave her the benefit of the doubt. They just assumed she was a Black child. She was unfocused. She knew nothing. And I realized then that I couldn't leave it to the teachers or to the schools to educate my children. I had to be involved at every step of the way in monitoring the information that came back from the school and what went back to the school. And I demanded to meet with the schools, to meet with the teachers, just to make sure that these children were on track. And my kids all graduated from Fresno Unified. And I'm just saying this so they all graduated valedictorian. But I had to fight for these children to be given the recognition they deserved. I'm sure that a different type of parent may have just relaxed or let them or believe that the teachers knew best. They don't necessarily know best for our children. We must be their biggest advocate. Otherwise, the system derails them.
Isaac, you were an educator as well. Did you have similar experiences, or what did you observe?
Well, being an educator, I made it my purpose to make certain that, you know, my children made it through the system, you know, being aware of various programs and other efforts that were out there. I made sure that they were accessible to them. However, I taught for about 27 years here in Bakersfield, and that includes my days in administration. My concern as I was involved in education were the young African-American children that were in the communities who did not have the advantage that my children had. I would sometimes go into the community and visit them in their home and see them over the summer. They lived in the projects and other areas that were dilapidated. And why did I do that? Because I was concerned about their growth, their development. I was concerned about what was happening in their community. And one thing that I would do near the end of the school year, I would have my students to write letters to public officials. One particular year, they wrote to the police chief, and they talked about brutality and things that were happening to them and others in their community whom they saw being taken advantage of and being beaten and having their heads stepped on and things like that. And so we reached out, and he came and spoke to my class, which was basically black and brown students. And so my thing in education was to be more than just a teacher, but to be a parent to the kids, and also to be a spokesperson for the parents. A lot of our parents, African-American parents, do not feel comfortable coming to schools because for various reasons. And so my efforts went beyond my three daughters. I made sure they were taken care of, and whatever problems they had, I addressed them, being an educator and being a black man. But I also reached out to other boys and girls who were disadvantaged and who were not treated fairly.
So, Shantae, you know, I'm hearing from a lot of my non-black friends right now who are reaching out to me about how they can be of help, how they can be an ally. And often those conversations include the raising of their children in a way that might lead to a better tomorrow. And so I'm wondering what words or advice you might have for non-black parents who are listening to this conversation and saying to themselves, how can I be of support?
I really appreciate that question. I have very many friends who are non-black, and I think it's really, really important and just part of our societal responsibility. And I almost like to say, despite your personal feelings, you just have to look at the data to know that there's oppression and racism. And so I really have two really strong feelings. And the first one is, I believe that we do our children a disservice when we raise them to say things like we're all treated equal. There is no such thing as skin color. We're all the same, because it simply is not true. And I think a real life approach is to use moments as teaching moments and really just to tell the truth. Because there are differences, very real differences. And the second thing that I think is very important is I think that non-black parents, particularly white families, I do believe that there is a level of moral or ethical obligation, if you will, to understand what white privilege is.
Thank you for that. Dipna, I'd like to come back to you.
Sure.
Do you have hope in this moment that things are going to actually meaningfully change?
I think we have to have hope. I mean, that's the only thing that can help us get over the hurt or the pain of this moment. I think I have hope. I believe that otherwise, have African Americans withstood 400 years of oppression and of mistreatment and of inequality? It's about believing that the future will be better, and that if all parents, including non-black parents, teach their children, have the same talks, a little differently though, with their children that we have with our children, maybe it will be a much better world for our children and their children. But we have to have hope. Otherwise, you know, like, what's the point?
Well, I can think of no better place to end this conversation than that. Thank you all so much for sharing your experience with us. And thank you all for being such incredible, caring parents. We know that is the most important job anyone could ever have. So thank you so much.
Thank you
for having me.